We're about to get started. Everybody hear me okay? Somebody raised their hand? Good. Okay, you hear me? Good. Let's get started. Okay, somebody, I'm David Cohn. I work for the CRC of Chicago. I'm going to be speaking tonight. We're happy to hear what you have to say. The chat is open on the side. And there's somebody else on the line, Rabbi David Aronin, who works with us at the CRC. He's going to be trying to be... focusing on people who want to ask questions. I'll stop every once in a while to let people ask questions. And you could try chatting on the side also. And I will see you within reason to answer those questions as well. What's the meeting doing?
Oh. Hey, I muted my accent.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay, I got muted also. Okay.
Can you just remind everyone to stay on mute unless they have questions. Until we open the floor for questions, everyone should stay on mute. Okay?
Okay. Thank you, Rabbi Aaron. Okay, tonight we're going to be talking about kashering a kitchen, which is something that lots of people get to do right before Pesach. Most of us don't kasher other than before Pesach, and especially for those who are kashering for the first time. Who are kashering their houses for the first time. It's something to think about and, you know, plan for what they have to do. I'm going to start with a number of sort of limitations of things that can't be kashered or some details like that, and then speak about five different areas in the kitchen that are typical to get kashered. I'll mention now, and I'll probably mention again in the future, that the CRC has a video that was made a number of years ago of the kashering of a kitchen. Goes through all the different steps. It's posted on YouTube, it's on our website, and it's worth watching. Just to actually see a lot of demonstrations. I have some recordings that I'm going to be showing here of parts being done. And that video really goes through a lot of different pieces to show how to get kashered. Okay. So kashering, as an introduction, kashering for most people, for most situations, has three parts to it. The first part is we have to get whatever we're kashering has to be clean. All the residue, all the leftover food has to be wiped away. The second step is the whatever I'm kashering has to not be used for 24 hours. And the last step is I have to do something to get all the flavor that's absorbed into the pot or the dish or the sink. I have to get that flavor out. Usually that involves hot water. Okay, not always, as we'll see, but usually that's what it is. So there's three steps. I have to clean it, wait 24 hours, and then do some kind of a hot process, usually hot water, to get the flavor out of it. Okay, so the first part, which is we have to get it clean, brings up a number of things that can't be kashered because we can't get them clean. The din is concerned that there's going to be a little bit of food left over, and since I can't get it clean, I won't be able to kasher it. So, for example, the CRC tells people that for Pesach, they can't kasher the dishwasher, and the reason is because this piece, I don't know if you can see on the screen, this piece where this and similar pieces where the silverware sits has lots of cracks and crevices, and because of that, since it has all these cracks and crevices where it's really hard to get it perfectly clean. So you're not able to kosher it because we can't get through step one. We can't get it clean. And the same thing for a colander and a grater, a pot that has loose handles on it, bottles that have narrow necks, and things like that. Another example of that is in some knives can't be kosher for that reason. And that is to say, if you look at this knife has a solid handle, with a blade on it, and there's no place where food would get stuck on it. And the way we test it is we take the knife the blade in one hand and the handle in the other, and you bend it. There's no space over here. As opposed to a knife like this, it's not going to show well on the screen, but in a knife like this where the handle is attached, when you bend it like this, a space opens up here where the blade hits the handle and food can get trapped in there. Because of that, a knife like this would not be able to be kashered. Okay. Another example is some countertops. Think of a wooden countertop. Think like a Korean countertop. Some of them get scratched or nicked or have little cracks in them where food could get trapped. Again, those cannot be kashered. And the last example like that is if you have a sink where the faucet has a coiled hose that comes out of the top, then that coiled part where all the folds of where that is has little cracks and crevices. It can't be cleaned. And because of that, it cannot be kashered as well. In that case, in the faucet case, you can continue to use the faucet on Pesach. You just can't pull out the coiled part. You can use the faucet as is without pulling out the part that has those coiled ridges on it where the food gets stuck. Okay. Now, There's some other things that theoretically you could kasher, but they're really hard. They're just hard to clean. For example, this is a sheet pan. Now, sheet pans have other reasons why they would be hard to kasher, but you can see this sheet pan is dirty as anything. So, in theory, it could be kashered, but someone would have to put in a huge amount of effort in order to make sure that it was really clean. Realistically, that means you can't kasher. Okay? I'm going to mention later on that, or I think I am, that different kinds of cloth, like dish towels and tablecloths, can be kashered just by washing them, putting through a hot wash on the washing machine. But an oven mitt, which seems to be very similar, as a rule, cannot be kashered because, I don't know if this is going to show on the picture, but there's food stuck onto here. And it's really hard. This has been washed many times. It's hard to get all the pieces of food out of it. And therefore, because you can't get the residue off of it, we didn't even get through step one, and therefore we can't kasher. Okay, now, for the next part, I'm going to show you something, which is about a blech. Okay, now, a blech also tends to have food baked onto it. It sits with pots and pans all Shabbos, and it tends to have things baked onto it. And because of that, it can't, and it's a rule, it wouldn't be kashered. I'm going to show you a video that shows how you would kasher a blech were it not to be dirty. Okay, were it to be a blech that was not so dirty, this is the way you would kasher a blech. Okay, I'm going to just give me a second to get this together, to get the video up, to show you how the blech. Hold on a second. Oh, just give me a second on the technical side over here. I apologize. I'm going to share my screen with you, and then you'll be able to see it. Okay, here we go. I hope you can see it. As you see, the blech is being put onto the fire. The fires are on in this case. Let me pause in for a second. You may have noticed the blech was put on upside down. That is because we want the flame to be touching the part where the food goes. So it was put on. Let's back up a second. I'll show you that again. The blech was put down upside down onto the flame. The fires are on. And now we're going to see, we're looking to see, our goal here is to see that the paper, it should get hot enough that paper should burn on it. And so it takes, in this case, it took about 2 minutes. Here the fire's on there. It took about 2 minutes of waiting here. And then you'll see that the paper that's being put onto it is pretty quickly going to be turning brown. It's going to be showing signs of being burnt. And that's good enough for us to tell us that this has been kosher properly.
Cool.
Okay, so it's going to replay itself. Okay, let's stop that and go back to where we were. Okay, you should see me again, I hope. Okay, let's pause here and we'll take some questions. If people have questions, I'm not sure how Rabbi Aaron's going to manage the on and off, or I should work through the chats.
I'll unmute the guy who raised his hand. So here's Daniel T.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so what about a stove that is electric? It's not an actual flame.
Okay, we're going to get to kashering that in a couple of minutes.
I mean for the blech. Is that adequate enough, or it has to be an actual fire?
Yes, that's okay. You could, if you were kashering a blech and it was clean, you could do it on an electric coil just as good as on a gas flame. In my house, we happen to have a gas flame. That's why you saw that sample like that.
There's another question about kashering a hot plate, if you can kasher a hot plate.
If you can kasher a hot plate. It's very difficult to kasher a hot plate. It's the easier thing than to kasher the hot plate is to clean it very well, not to use it for 24 hours, and then cover it with a double layer of foil, and then you could use it on Pesach.
And another question was, does a thrip cloth need to be kashered if it's only used for checking vegetables?
Okay. Yes, a thrip cloth should be washed, put through a wash to be cleaned for vegetables, but I was sort of out of topic from where we were. I'm going to try to move back to where we were.
Okay, so this one actually is relevant. It says, How would I kosher a knife with a plastic handle? Do I just cover the handle after doing Haggala?
Okay, so a knife with a plastic handle can be kosher. I was just demonstrating that we can't kosher a knife where this food might get stuck. But in this case, the knife that I showed before, and this has a plastic handle, the CRCR allows for koshering with plastic. I'm going to be talking about that in a second. And you could kosher it as is, and it would be perfectly fine to use. It doesn't need to be covered.
Okay, we'll take one more question. Why can't they kosher the dishwasher by just taking out all of the racks and things like that? Or here it says specifically the Civil War piece that you showed.
Right.
Would you be able to kosher without that?
Right. So the answer to that question is for year round, we would allow the koshering of that. The problem is even if you took out the racks and you took out the all the things that hold the silverware, the bottom of the dishwasher where the drain goes still has little particles of food. For year round, those little particles wouldn't make a difference. For Pesach, where even the smallest amount of chametz coming in contact with my dishes or my food is a concern, you can't kosher a dishwasher. That's why we don't allow koshering of dishwashers for Pesach. We wouldn't allow it for year round.
Okay, so all the other questions seem to be relevant to something that's going to be coming up a little bit later. So can we
I got something with the blech.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Okay. I had a bad memory when I saw the kasher and the blech. Once upon a time, I heard that if you put a blech on top of the grates, that could also kasher the grates. I once had an experience, not you know, young and naive, that and it wasn't a separate oven. But it was the burners coming in a counter area. So I had a blech on there, but next to the blech, there was countertops. It looked a little bit like what you had there. It's quite dangerous because when you turn on the heat with a blech on top, it's going to spread out the fire, and it can, I know from experience, the countertop can catch on fire.
Okay. If that's a concern, I guess you need to be cautious for sure. Everyone needs to be careful when they do kashering. We haven't had that experience, but definitely a person should be careful. Okay, let's move on.
Other questions are about kashering specific things, which we're going to get to. So let's hold off on the questions until a little bit later.
Okay, let's continue. Another type of things that we can't, the first group of things I told you can't be kashering are having to do with the fact that they can't get clean, that first step in kashering. This next group are things that can't be kashering, because we can't do the third step, which is we can't do the hot process to get the tam out. We can't get the flavor out through the hot water or something else. Realistically, we can't do that, and therefore we can't kosher them. Okay. Top of the list for those is things that are made of ceramic, of cheres, where the Torah says we can't kosher them. An example here, this is a kind of a crock pot container, the pot of a crock pot, which is made out of ceramic, it can't be kosher, coffee mug, a porcelain sink, china dishes. Those are all examples of things that are made of cheres, of some kind of a ceramic where they can't be kashered because the material that they're made out of. There are lots of countertops that also cannot be kashered for that reason. We have a long list of countertops that can and cannot be kashered. You can see them in our Pesach guide. You could search on AskCRC. Just type in the name of the counter, and you'll see, like, for example, if you have a decked-in counter, it'll tell you that, no, you can't kosher it. If you have a cement counter, it can't be kosher. If you tell them I have a different kind of counter, then those can be kosher. So there's many different types, and the general rule is, as long as it's not heresy, it can be kosher. Now, that brings us to a disagreement between different rabbis about how to treat these. It has to do with countertops, and it has to do with other materials as well, and that is, is it possible to kasher something that's made of a synthetic material? The Torah tells us we can kasher metal and wood. The Gemara says you can kasher wood and stone and all kinds of materials. And the Torah says we cannot kasher cheres, and we'll talk about glass in a second. The Torah obviously does not talk about synthetic materials like plastic that are modern inventions. So some rabbis take the position, Rav Moshe Feinstein had this opinion, that you cannot kasher synthetic materials. So many countertops or stone countertops that are covered with a synthetic sealant on top of it, they were of the opinion you cannot kasher those. However, many Paiskim in Eretz Yisrael, it's common in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Henkin himself and Rav Schwartz by us in the CRC, and most of the American Hashgachas take the opposite position and say that synthetic materials can be kashered year-round and for Pesach. And for that reason, there are lots of countertops that we the CRC, allowed to kosher, and you'll see them on our list as being able to kosher, that other rabbis might not agree with. Locally, Rabbi First takes that position. But the CRC follows the position, again, which is common in Eretz Yisrael. It's common in the American Hashgachas, which is that synthetic materials can be kosher. Okay, now, another thing I had mentioned was that glass is Ashkenazim, our machmir, that glass cannot be kosher. So Pyrex, the cover of that crock pot that you saw before, the glass plate in your microwave, there are kind of pots that are called a porcelain enamel pot, Those are also made of glass. They can't be kashered. Some of you may remember your grandmother's kashering drinking glasses with a special thing called milu v'iroi to soak it for 3 days. Nowadays, it's too complicated, but we don't do that nowadays. Realistically, we're not able to kasher that way. There's a couple of exceptions. A couple of exceptions where we do kasher glass. The one that's common for people is glass stovetops, which we'll talk about when we get to stovetops, that we have a method for kashering those as well. And to the surprise of many, the interior of most ovens are made of something called is a porcelain enamel, which is glass, but the way we kasher is sufficient for that. And that's, so what's, those are things like glass and cheres that can't be kashered because of the material they're made out of. There are other things that can't be kashered realistically because they need libun. They need a kind of kashering that's so difficult that it needs such a strong amount of fire and flame on it that realistically most people can't do that. That would apply to a toaster or a sheet pan. That is to say, things which are used on the fire with dry food. You put bread into a toaster. You put into a sheet pan. You put cookies right into a sheet pan. Things that are relatively dry without liquid, and they're put right onto the fire. Okay. Now, another example of that is the grates of a barbecue. When you use a barbecue, you know, you put foods right onto that. I'm going to try to show you a video of that as well. There is a way to kasher those. I'm going to show you how it's done. For most people, the grates are not so easy to kasher. They can be kasher. I'm going to show you how to do that. This is not for the chamber of the barbecue. This is just for the grate itself. And what we're going to be doing is, I'm going to get this rolling so you can see it in a second. What we're going to do is we're going to sandwich the grate between layers of charcoal. That is to say, is we're going to put a layer of charcoal below and above the grate, and then we're going to, above and below the grate, and then we're going to light them up and let them burn for an hour or so, okay? So here we go. Here's our video. Let's see if this works. Okay, no, not so quick. Hold on a second. Sorry about this. I got to get the technical part of it working. Here we go. Okay, here we go. You ready? I think you should be seeing it on your screen now. It's about 30 seconds long. Laying down a layer of charcoal with the grate on top of it, and then the coals on top of it. Light it up. Takes a couple of seconds. After giving a drop of time, the coals will be nice and very hot over here. That holds on for a while. It sits and burns. We would say tell people to give it an hour or so. And at that point, even after an hour, the coals are still very, very hot. And at that point, we consider the grate of that barbecue to have been kashered. I think you're back to me now. Let me turn that off. I was going to make a racket here on my computer. Okay, so that shows how you would have kashered a grate. If you have a bigger barbecue grate, that was a really small one. Obviously, you need a lot more charcoal for that. Okay, another example where this comes out of something that needs libun is most frying pans. And if you're a person who uses a frying pan with very significant amounts of oil, then it's okay to kasher it. You would kasher it the way I showed you to kasher blech. You would turn it upside down, put it over the fire, and let it heat up until it got so hot that on the other side you were able to, you had to be got to let this play, or you could test that by putting a piece of paper onto it. If you use just a little bit of oil, if you use not too much oil, or it's Teflon coated that you can't put it over the fire, then you can't kosher it. And therefore, as a rule, most people need to have new separate frying pans just for Pesach. Okay, I'm going to pause now. Now that we've finished the things that cannot be koshered, we're going to get to the things that can be koshered and how to do that. I'll pause for some questions.
Okay, so how about a gas grill? Do we kosher the grate the same way?
So the grate part of it has to be koshered the same way. It needs to be taken out, sandwiched between layers of coals, and lit up and to burn. That's for the grate itself. I'll mention the chamber is easier to kosher. The chamber needs to be cleaned well. That's not always so easy. It needs to be cleaned well, and after it's cleaned, turned on high and left like that for an hour, and that will kosher the whole interior, the whole chamber of the barbecue. But the grates, the part where the food goes right onto them, those need to be taken out and done like I showed you in the video a minute ago.
Okay, so someone's asking about the glass in the front of the self-clean oven, which we'll talk about.
gets that.
And the great in this scenario, would the grate have to be cleaned first, or because you're doing leave when you don't have to?
Does clean not need it well? To be cleaned. No, I mean if there's you know a big piece of food on it that should be taken off, but anything small does not need to be taken off. The leaven will take care of it.
And then someone's asking about Teflon. Can it never be kashered, or is it not for Pesach? Or
Teflon in theory can be kashered. So for example, if you have a pot that's coated with Teflon, the pot just needs to be kashered with hot water. You could kasher that. In the case that I just mentioned about the frying pan, because you have to turn it upside down over the fire, the Teflon can't handle the heat of that. So realistically, you can't kosher it. But when the koshering is a simpler kind of koshering that just needs hot water, then Teflon can be koshered. It's a synthetic material, and it can be koshered like others.
Okay.
Okay.
So for now.
That's it. Good. Okay, so let's move on. Okay. Now, before we get to koshering, there were a couple of steps that we have to do to prepare. I've already mentioned that we need to clean things, make sure there's no rust and there's no food left over on them. On the bottom of a kiddush cup, there might be some things left over inside of the cracks of a fork. So everything has to be cleaned beforehand. Our next step was it has to be Eina Binyamin. That means it's for 24 hours before the koshering. That item can't be used with anything hot. So if you're koshering your counter or your silverware or your whatever it is, for 24 hours beforehand, you can't use it for hot. And that's why a lot of people like the kosher on Matzoy Shabbos or on Sunday morning, because basically it's easy to not use things with hot the whole Shabbos. So, for example, if you're going to be koshering your sink after Shabbos, then before Shabbos comes, turn off the hot water underneath the sink. Be careful not to pour anything hot into your sink during Shabbos, and then you can kosher right after Shabbos because it hasn't been used. That's you got your 24 hours. Okay? As an aside to that, two aside points for this effect, you have to wait for 24 hours. One is, because of that reason, because a pot has to be, things have to be not used for 24 hours, that's why we can't kosher anything on Pesach. We can only kosher before Pesach. And that's because this thing called Eina Ben Yoimoy, that if you don't use it for 24 hours, it's special, that doesn't work on Pesach. The special Chomer of Pesach, waiting 24 hours doesn't help you. So effectively, you can't do koshering when something gets treif on, something becomes chometzdik on Pesach. So we need to do all of our koshering beforehand. So, for example, if a person is going to be possibly home on Pesach, they can't say, I'll kasher on Chol HaMoed, because you cannot kasher come Chol HaMoed. Okay, another thing is that Eina Ben Yoimoy plays a role in the picking the pots that we're going to kasher with. We're going to talk about kashering with hot water and pouring hot water and dunking into hot water. Well, those pots that we want to make filled with hot water, they don't have to be Pesach pots. It could be any pot. It could be milchigs or fleischigs or chametz, or for that matter, treif. As long as it's clean and has not been used in 24 hours, we could use it for kashering. But if we have a pot that has been, then obviously that we can't. So this 24 hours, not only does it have to do with the things we're getting kashered, the silverware or the counter, it also has to do with the pot that we're using for the kashering. That needs to not be used for 24 hours before we want to do the kashering. Okay. And last, before we actually get to the kashering, is everyone needs to be very careful of safety. Kashering, as a rule, involves hot water or making things very hot. In the case I showed you before of the blech, that blech sitting on the stovetop was very, very hot. Even just 2 minutes sitting there, it was very hot. People have to be very careful to be sure that children are at a safe distance. You don't have, you know, things hanging off from your hair or jewelry or things hanging, your sleeves are untied. Just be careful about safety, that no one should get hurt during kashering. Okay, I'm going to now go to the five things that we're going to talk about kashering. Any questions before I move on?
Some people ask about, they're asking about Ben Yomo, about self-cleaning, if it has to be Eina Ben Yomo by self-cleaning, which I'm sure we'll get to.
I'm going
to
get to
that. Someone wants to know if pouring scotch down the sink is considered hot and you have to wait 24 hours.
That was some scotch, like the drink scotch?
Yes, I think it's a joke.
That's okay. That's not a problem. That's yes, you
okay. And then, so you only have to wait 24 hours if it's being used with hot. So if it's cold, if you're using your sink with cold water, that's still okay.
That's okay. That's fine. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. We're good.
Let's go. We're moving on. Okay. We're going to be talking about kashering of five different groups of things. I'll tell you what they are. The first is going to be small utensils. Then we're going to talk about things like pots. Then we're going to move to the sink and the counters. That's a third group. It's a little harder than a microwave. And last is going to be ovens and stovetops. Okay? So our first group is going to be kashering of small utensils. We're talking here about silverware, a kiddush cup, those kind of things. It's relatively easy to do that kashering. You take a pot, as I mentioned, a pot that hasn't been used in 24 hours. fill it up with water. When the water comes to a boil, you put the items in one at a time, check them that they're clean, put them in one at a time into the water. They can't be dumped in all at once. And after a bunch of things are put in, let's say you put in, you're doing a whole group of silverware. After a couple of them are put in, the water is going to cool down and will not be at a rolling boil anymore. You have to give it some time to catch up and before you put more into it. So as you keep putting in, you're putting in cold things into the water. You have to just keep an eye that the water should be remain hot. Okay. Then when you're finished, when you've done as much as you need to, the minute is that we wash off those things with cold water afterwards. Okay, that's not a requirement. If you didn't do it, the kashering is still effective. But the minute is it needs to be washed with cold water. Now, in thinking about washing with cold water, just have to pay attention to the fact that if you're kashering, let's say, silverware on your stovetop and your sink is not yet kosher l'Pesach, you don't want to be pouring that water into your sink and now potentially making your silverware tray chametzik again. So if your sink hasn't been used in 24 hours, then that's fine. Then you can pour things in. Even if it hasn't kashered yet, you can pour it in and rinse it with cold water. But if your sink is chametzik, then you don't want to pour the hot water into the chametzik sink together with your dishes that just became kosher l'Pesach. Okay? But it's relatively straightforward to do these things. Let's say a person wants to kasher their silverware to use for Pesach. They want to kasher all the Kiddush cups, this big pot of water, and dunk everything in one at a time into the kasher. Okay, that was the easy one. Any questions on that one?
I don't see anything, though.
Good. We'll move on. Okay. Kashering. Now, our next one is kashering pots. Kashering a pot is a little more complicated than silverware because, as a rule, it's not so easy to get a pot into another pot. Okay, you can dunk silverware into a pot. It's pretty hard to get pot into a pot. Now, one rule to keep in mind is that you don't need to kasher a pot all at once. You can kasher it you can kasher anything in pieces. So if you have a pot that half of it fits into another pot, and then you do one side and then the other side, that's perfectly fine. So you want to do your kashering for pots with your largest pot, your stock pot, and you're going to kasher other pots that have to get kashered. The easiest way is put them into the large pot, and one at a time, do the left side, do the right side, make sure that you get all the pieces in. Okay? In kashering a pot, you have to make sure that you do the kasher the cover as well. To kasher the cover, again, if you have a pot that's bigger, it's easy to get the cover in. If you don't have a bigger pot, what you're going to need to do is turn the cover sideways and rotate it around that all parts of the cover are getting inside the pot, and then turn it upside down so that even the top side of the cover gets in also. Okay. Now, I told you how to do – I'm trying to get to another video to show you. I told you how to do all the pots. Everything is counted on this biggest pot. Okay, what happens to the biggest pot? What happens to the pot that's so big I can't even get any of it into another pot or have this very large pot? I have no way – how will I kasher it? So the answer is going to be – I'm going to show you how to do it in a second. But the answer is what we need to do is we're going to get as much water as we can into the pot, and then we're going to get water to overflow from that pot to kasher to the very top of the pot and over the rim around the edges of the outside of the pot also. In order to do that, we need to add something to this pot so that it's pretty full, it's 95% full, and we're going to make it be overflowed. So the way we suggest for people to do it is, our suggestion for people is that they use a small saucepan. I'm going to show you what it's like in a second. Just give me a second to show that to you. But we suggest to people to use a saucepan. Put a saucepan on the fire next to – hold on a second. I'm sorry. I'm distracting myself. You need to put the saucepan onto the fire next to the big pot of water. When the saucepan needs a little water in it so you don't burn the pan, the saucepan. And then when both of them are ready, you're going to lower the saucepan into the large pot. You'll see what's going to happen in a second. I'm going to show you actually in a video of it. But this process that you're about to see is messy, and it causes hot water to spill all over the place. That's the goal here. We're trying to get the water to overflow. It's going to cause hot water. So it's extra reason to be careful. And also, just for cleanliness, the common thing is that we put towels around. You'll see in the video, towels laid out beforehand to catch the hot water. But be extra careful when you're doing this because we're dealing with hot water spilling. Okay, I'm going to show you now. I'm going to try to show you again that video.
While you're saying that, can I ask you a question? Yes. How long, let's say you're doing like silverware, how long should they be in the hot water for?
It doesn't make a difference. It, just for a second. As long as the water's boiling when you dunk the silver in, it's kashered.
If
you're kashering something that's very thick and heavy, like this, someone asked about a meat hammer, how do you kasher something very heavy? So then when you put it in, sometimes that in itself will cause the water to cool down. So just wait till the water comes back to a boil. But if you throw in just one fork into boiling water, that's fine. And you don't have, doesn't have to same even for more than a second.
And a glass lid would not be able to be kashered based on what we said before.
Glass cannot be kashered, correct. Okay, so now I'm going to show you here goes this video. Hopefully this is going to work. No, let me start it again. Sorry. Let me go back up and start it again. It's in the middle. Okay, here you go. There's our big pot. There's the towels on the floor and on the counter. There's our big pot. That's the stock pot. Next to it is our small little, our saucepan. They both have water boiling in them, as you should be able to see. You see the steam coming up. And it's going to take a second. Just here we go. Okay, so when we did that, we got our water to let me turn this off now. We got the water to overflow. It kashered that whole big pan, that larger pot, and it made a little bit of a mess. But it was pretty effective and it did the trick that it needed to do. Okay, wait a second.
You have to kasher all these things, but let's say the pot that you're kashering in or the tongs you're using to remove the things, do you have to kasher those first or could they be chametz thick?
You do not need to kasher them. As long as it has not been used in 24 hours and it's clean, can be used in the kashering process. It doesn't need to be kashered. So it just needs to be clean and not used for 24 hours. Okay. I'm going to pause now if anybody has questions on these parts, on the small dishes or the pots.
Someone just asked about a stain. Is a stain considered dirty? A stain, if a pot is stained?
Okay, it's a good question. The answer is, if it's something that when you rub your hand on it, you can feel it, meaning it's above the metal, then that needs to be removed. Anything that's a stain that's absorbed in, that when you rub your hand on it, there's nothing, you feel nothing, you don't have to worry about that. That you could leave. Only have the things that are over the surface, that you can actually feel when there's something stuck there, that has to be taken off.
And then one other question that's interesting. Could you, let's say you have a pot and you put all your silver in one at a time. Could you just pick up the pot and pour out all the water and then have all the silver remain in the pot and then rinse it off afterwards? You have to pull them out of the water.
Yes, that's fine. I just recommend that if you're going to be doing that, to rinse it with cold water, turn on the cold water before you pour it out. Okay, because when you pour that big pot of hot water, it makes a huge clouds of steam. Take off your glasses beforehand, and you just then do turn on the water, dunk out all the hot water, and then rinse it with cold water. That's fine.
And the smaller pot that you used to put into the bigger pot, would that have to be kashered afterwards? It's independently, or it's okay?
Okay. It needs to be clean and not used for 24 hours. That process that we just showed didn't kasher the saucepan. As long as the saucepan is clean and not 24 hours, you could use it in this process. But we didn't kasher it because the inside didn't really get filled with water. But we could use it for the kasher. Okay,
right, yes.
Move on. Okay. Okay, we're now moving to the sink and the counters. They're together because they're kashered in a very similar way. They're kashered in a process that we call irui, pouring of hot water. And the reason why we use pouring hot water is because in this case, that's how they became treif. That's how they became chametz thick. Your sink, no one cooked food in your sink or on your counter. It's something got spilled onto there. Something, a piece of, let's say you drained spaghetti over your sink. So there's chametz being used in your sink, but you didn't cook it in there. You poured it into your sink. Or a piece of toast was put onto your counter. So something hot that was chametz was on your counter. It wasn't cooking in there. It was just poured onto there, so to speak. So we kasher with a process called iroi. And so the first step, of course, is make sure that our material is one that can be kashered. We don't want to we can't do it to a porcelain sink. We can't do it to certain countertops that the materials, as I mentioned before, can't be kashered. Also, they need to be clean and not used for 24 hours, of course, like everything else that gets kashered. Okay. In the sink, we have, when we're kashering the sink, we'll do that one first. There are two pieces in there that need to be removed and either replaced or left off for Pesach, because these are pieces that have small holes in them where food can get trapped. Okay, the two pieces I'm talking about are the aerator. That's the little device. You'll see it in the video in a second. At the end of the faucet, right where the water comes out of, and if you remove it, your water won't come out looking so nice from your faucet. So either you could just live with it for Pesach, not looking so nice, or go to Home Depot and buy one for a dollar and put a new aerator on. And on the bottom, the drain on the bottom where the water goes out of, that also needs to be removed. Both of those are things with small little holes in them, which we would not be comfortable saying that they were got rid of all the actual chametz. Okay, let me show you how those are. Those also a short video here. Just give me a second to pull that up.
While you're doing that, if you pour your hot water into your sink, do you have to wait another 24 hours after that?
That's a good question. If the sink was not used for 24 hours beforehand, and the water you pour in is from a koshering pot, you did not mess up your 24 hours. If you poured something else hot in, you would mess up your 24 hours. But pouring in the hot water from your koshering pot does not affect your ein binyan. Okay.
And let's say you can't. You just said you should remove your aerator. Let's say you can't remove it. You just get a new sink. Is there any advice for that?
I would not get a new sink. No, but if you try, you'll see. It could be taken off. I don't know what to say. Sometimes you need a wrench. You'll see here how they take it off in this video. Okay. Hold on a second. Here we go. Okay, that's a sink. Okay, here we go. Now to take off the aerator. It was a little hard to get off. Use a towel to loosen it. And here it is being unscrewed. Okay, that's the aerator. And then on the bottom is the drain that gets pulled out as well. Okay, so much for that. Let's see if I can turn this off now. Okay, we got that done. So we need to take those two pieces out because they can't be kashered. In kashering the sink and the counter, there's a few pieces we have to keep in mind, a few pieces of information we have to keep in mind, and that is we need to pour the water on a dry surface. So the sink that you saw a second ago was not dry. So it needs to be dried before we do the kashering. Also, we want to pour water directly from the pot or the kettle or whatever we're using, from this hot water directly onto every spot. Now, directly on every spot realistically is not such an easy thing to do, but we need to make an effort to get every single spot directly from the pot, as opposed to just letting it pour over the place or splash it on the counter. We want to pour it gently so we don't hurt ourselves, and gently so that we cover every spot carefully. It's also, we are in most cases, one pot is not going to do the trick. It's not going to be enough to just use one pot to get this whole area. And it will take a number of pots or a pot a few times being used a few times. So in my house, when we kasher those parts of the kitchen, we will have all four burners will have pots boiling on them. And we go from pot to pot to make sure we can cover all the surfaces that need to be kashered. Okay. It's very messy. Okay, when we get to counters, even more so. But even kashering the sink is messy, and you have to be careful because it's very, very hot water. So, in my house, this is what we do: we put disposable tablecloths to cover the cabinets, so that the lower cabinets, the cabinets below the counter, don't get water onto them. We have to do that carefully, also, because that's all now a funnel that water could run through. So you have to do that carefully. We usually wear boots as well, put towels onto the floor to catch the water that's falling down, and then we carefully pour the water into the different spots that they have to be poured.
A lot of people are asking questions about these. Yes. The faucets have the extendable hoses.
Yes, apparently I'm getting
the aerators don't come off of that.
Yes, so okay. Extended faucets that the aerators don't come off on don't have to be removed. It's a different kind of a faucet. You don't have to take that off.
And then one other question a bunch of people are asking about, when you pour the water into the sink, the rest of the sink gets all wet. So how can you do a piecemeal if it's all wet now?
Good. So the answer is, that's why we start from the bottom of the sink. I don't know if I mentioned that or I was going to mention it. We start from the bottom and work our way up to minimize how much water is getting onto the spots. If we did start from the top, then the bottom is going to be wet. So in all these cases, all these things I mentioned of trying to hit every spot and needing to be dry, that's what the din says it has to have. But the din is realistic here also, is that how can I kasher my counter and have everything perfectly dry? As soon as I start pouring water, it's going to get wet. So to the extent that I can, I'm trying to get a dry surface and hit every spot with that water within reason of how much I can possibly do. Okay, so the the main part of the sink involves pouring water. Okay, I need to pour water starting from the bottom and working my way up and covering it. If your sink has a lip that goes above the counter, that needs to be kashered as well. We need to pour water over the faucet, over the knobs, over everything. Okay, we're going to try to get water on all the different parts over here. Okay, one part that has an extra little piece to it is the faucet itself. So before I tell you about kashering it, I've mentioned beforehand that if a faucet has a coiled hose to it, we can't kasher it. We should leave it there, and we could use the faucet on Pesach, but we can't pull out that faucet on Pesach. So we tell people to tape it up or put something on there so people don't forget. And then we kasher it as regular. But after we've kashered the whole sink, the faucet itself, we have an extra little bit that we ask that people to do to kasher that sink. And that is, we want to put the end of the faucet, to the end that we can, into boiling water. Okay, and I'll show you how we do that. Let me see if I can pull up. We got the video of that. Yeah, I do. Okay, I'm going to pull that up. Now, this video that you're about to see, this video is part of the video that we made about kashering your kitchen. This is the video I mentioned at the beginning about how to kasher your kitchen. It covers a lot of these things that I've talked about here, and it demonstrates them, each one in their own little bit. Let's see, how do I get that up? No. Oh, here it is. Okay. Okay, here we go. I assume you see this now. Do you see the video?
Yeah.
The angle is not so great on that picture. I'm going to play it again. But what he's doing is he's taking the pot and he's going to lift up the pot so that the faucet gets dunked into the water. The angle is not so great on it. First, he's doing the top. And now watch how he lifts up the pot to get the tip of the faucet in. Okay. I hope that was clear. Okay, let's get back to me. Okay, I'm back on, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. That's for a sink. A countertop is very similar. Again, it's dry, it's clean, it hasn't been used in 24 hours, and we pour the water carefully in all the spots. Counters also have a backsplash to them, a back part of the counter. It's really hard to get boiling water onto those areas. If you can, that's great. Excuse me, if you can't, then they should be covered. I'll mention that there are some people who have a custom that even if they kasher their counters, they cover them also. In addition to kashering them, they cover them also. If that's your family's minute, then that's what you should do. Okay, now before I finish with counters and sinks, I have to mention something about steamers. And that is, it's a very common question we get nowadays, is I don't want to pour boiling water. It's really hard and it's messy and it's a whole to-do to pour boiling water on my sinks. Can I use a steamer? And a steamer it's a device that's meant for cleaning all different kinds of surfaces, and it shoots out steam or hot water, and it's used for cleaning. And it's very focused, and it's not so much water, and it has a nozzle that points in a very specific direction. So it seems like a great way to kasher my counters and my sinks. Instead of pouring pots of boiling water all over the place and making a mess and taking a long time, I want to use a steamer. It's a very common question. The answer is there are two conditions that need to be fulfilled if you want to use a steamer. And those two conditions are: what goes onto the counter needs to be a liquid, needs to be water and not just steam. And so sometimes we have steam that condenses into a liquid. That's fine. But in the end of the day is the counter needs to be has to have liquid come in contact with it. And the second condition is that liquid needs to be in the area of boiling water. So let's say 200 degrees, needs to be hot. And what tends to be is that steamers either have hot water or they have the temperature. But it's very uncommon to find both, that it has a liquid and that liquid is hot enough to be used for kashering of these surfaces. So most steamers that we've looked at, we're not satisfied with them. We were not comfortable saying that they were good enough to do a kashering with. There is someone in town. His last name is Lanopolsky. We watched him. He uses this very unusual device. He's very, very patient because his method is very slow and painstaking. And we're comfortable the way he kashers with the machine he uses, a sort of a steamer. The CRC recently bought a device that cost, if I got it right, about $1,200. So it's not meant for your everyday Joe to buy for themselves. But in other cities, there are people who have, played around with specific devices to make them work. So if you have a steamer that does the trick and meets those two conditions, it's liquid and the liquid is hot enough, then that's fine to kasher with. But again, most of the steamers you buy for $49.95 are not going to do the trick. Excuse me, they're not going to be good enough for kashering. And you're sort of going to be stuck either with using the hot water or covering your counters. Okay, let's pause here for questions before we move on to the next thing.
I've actually been answering questions as we go along. Is there any difference between an undermount sink is the same as a regular sink, right?
Before we go on, I have to tell everybody that Rabbi Aronin is one of the people who answers lots and lots of questions at the CRC every single day of the year. So if he's answering you, he's really on top of how things are done. He's very helpful. So he's here for us tonight. That's great. But every day, if you ask questions to the CRC, you're very often hearing what he has to say. Go ahead, Rabbi Aronin. What's your
the question is, people are asking if you can cover things without koshering them, like the sink. You just cover it with heavy-duty aluminum foil and not kosher it at all.
Okay. So the answer is yes and sort of no. The answer is yes is if something is covered, it does not need to be koshered. Commonly, there are people who do it for their countertops. They buy some kind of a covering, some kind of a replacement that goes on top of their counter, and then they could use their counter as is without koshering it. Now, let's do the counter first. It needs to be something that's strong enough and sturdy enough for the use that's going to go on that counter. You're going to be putting pots, you're going to be cutting things, you're going to be all kinds of things. So it has to be sturdy enough that it's going to last through Pesach and also will not let liquid pass through it. Okay, if water goes through it, then that affects the way the bleed has happened. That you can't do for Pesach. So it has to be something sturdy that can handle that. Now, in a sink, it's even more complicated because you can use a sink, and there are many people. I was just on the phone an hour ago with somebody who, in their family, they put an insert into their sink. I don't think that foil is going to do the trick in a sink because water will seep through. But they put an insert, which is sort of like a big basin, into their sink, and they don't kosher the sink. They put an insert in. Now, that's fine. It's okay to do that. However, bear in mind that if hot water gets onto the outside of the insert or hot water backs up through your drain, then that potentially causes problems to make your kalim not kosher Pesach. So you can do it. It's a reasonable choice on a counter. Many people do it for their counters. For a sink, it's not a great choice because there's a lot of hot water by the sink, from the hot water from the faucet, hot water from, you know, draining out a pot of, I don't know, corned beef or whatever it is. And you have to just, if that hot water, anything hot ends up on the outside between the insert and the sink, then you're going to have problems. You're going to need to speak to your rabbi on Pesach. So for a sink, it's not the greatest choice, but for counters, it's perfectly fine.
Let's say you have a garbage disposal, it has like those rubber flaps. Is there an mm-hmm. issue with that?
So those rubber flaps need to be koshered. Rubber can be koshered. So they do need to be koshered. But think about when you're going to be pouring all that water down your sink as you kosher your sink, that's one of the things that's going to get hit. And it will be koshered. It does need to be koshered, and it will be koshered.
Okay. And then, again, so are we – let's say a person starts in the top or whatever it is, and there's still water in the sink. So when he's – let's say he only has one pot. So he pours one pot and he does the walls first. So now the bottom of the sink is still wet. Does he have to dry it off first?
Yes. Before he pours the next pot, he should dry it out. If it's very hot water, it'll evaporate pretty quickly, and then you have to give it 10 seconds and then use a dish towel to dry it off. Yes, it should be dried off.
Okay, and then okay. And then so about the pull down faucets,
the coiled hoses.
Yeah, so how would you do those? You pour water on top of it and then you dip it, like you said, like the regular
yes,
faucet?
Yes, that's what you would do, but then just don't pull out the coiled part on Pesach. Yes, but you pour water on top of it, dunk it into the pot, and then don't use the coiled feature on Pesach.
Okay. And to point out, there are some questions that are a little bit more involved. Everyone can always email the CRC at info@crcweb.org with your questions, and we'll be happy to follow up. It's getting kind of late, so we want to try and move this along. So if we don't answer all the questions, it's not because we don't like you. It's just we're just trying to move things along. So you can always email the questions to info@crcweb.org.
Yes, thank you. Good point. Okay, and then our next piece is a pretty simple one, is the koshering of microwave. I have mentioned already that the tray in the microwave, which is a glass tray, we can't kosher glass, so that needs to be taken out, either get a new one or just live without the glass tray for Pesach. And then it needs to be cleaned. That's not always an easy job in a microwave. Some microwaves are very messy. It needs to be thoroughly clean. After it's clean, and after you've taken out the glass, you take a bowl or something that can hold water, a nice amount of water, put it in for a long time, 10, 15 minutes, so that it boils and, you know, spritzes steam all around the microwave, and that will be the kosher of the microwave. There is reason to cover your foods on Pesach, even if you kosher your microwave. You don't need to. It's an advantage. It's commendable to do that. But if you didn't do that, then you did what I just described, then your microwave is kosher for Pesach also. Okay, let's move on to our last topic, which is ovens and stovetops. This is something that just about every single person kashers. Everything I mentioned till now, lots of people have separate for Pesach. But ovens and stovetops, you sort of can't replace for Pesach. So just about everybody kashers theirs if they're staying home. So we'll do the stovetop first. The stovetop, whether it's gas or electric, we'll get to the glass stovetop in a second. But the regular burners of glass or electric, the first thing is you take off all the pieces that can come off. That means, especially in the gas one, the grates and the little discs and all the pieces, everything that can come off should be taken off. I'm put on the side for a second. If you have a sealed stovetop, which most of them are nowadays, then you don't have to worry about food falling in underneath. If you have an oven a stovetop that is not sealed, meaning food can fall in under the burners, you have to lift it up and clean it out. Then when you're ready to kosher, you can't use everything. Everything has to be not used for 24 hours. And then we have two choices of how to kosher those grates and all those pieces that I told you to take off. One is to take all those pieces, stick them into the oven on a piece of foil, turn the oven on to 550 and leave them there for an hour. That will kosher all those pieces that I just told you about. That's one choice. The other choice is, I guess you wouldn't have taken all those pieces off. You would turn on the flames and leave them on for an hour right on the stovetop. Leave everything on as is, and that would kosher it as well. With an electric coil, if the stovetop has electric coils instead of gas, then it's easier. It maybe needs 15 minutes only, because if you turn the coils on to high, the coils themselves turn red hot, and that's a good enough koshering, and it does for everything, all the pieces that have to do with the coils get done with electric in maybe 15 minutes, just turn them on to high, and that will kosher them. Now, all that I just described to you is koshering all the parts of the stovetop, that the grates and the little discs and the coils, all those pieces are getting koshered. But the space between the burners is not being koshered. That area, that whole surface, has not been koshered. And if food goes onto those surfaces on Pesach, that food can't be eaten. So what you need to do is those surfaces need to be covered with, most people use foil or something else. There's a special kind of mat you could put down if you want to. There are things that can go on there, something that can handle the heat, needs to be used to cover it. So this way, you don't have to worry if something would fall there. If you don't cover it, then any piece of food or any pot that goes there or any dish that falls onto there is no longer kosher Pesach. Okay, so that's for the for a gas or an electric stovetop. For a glass covered stovetop, you obviously there's no pieces to take off. There's just one sheet of glass. So what you need to do is, first is clean and don't use it for 24 hours. That's our first step, as usual. Okay. Then we have two choices. One choice, as Rabbi Schwartz endorsed, was turn on the burners to high for 15 minutes, and that kashers it, and you're in business. Okay. You can now cook on that glass stovetop. That said, if you did it this way, you should be trying to cover the surfaces. You can't cover an entire glass stovetop. It's not safe. It'll crack the stovetop. But you could put foil, strips of foil between the burners, a strip like a box around the burners. And this way, if things go onto that foil, they stay kosher Pesach. If they get onto glass that's not right over the burners, then there's a shail on them. Okay. The other choice is, which has a certain advantage to it, is to instead of just koshering the burners, to put down metal discs. They sell metal discs that go on these kind of surfaces. And then your pot is not sitting on the glass stovetop. Your pot is sitting on this metal disc, in which case you're okay. The fact that whether the surface was koshered or not is not important. There's a buffer between your pot and the surface, and that's good enough for you to cook on that surface. Okay? And our last thing we have to do is ovens.
Can I ask you one more question about that? So, yes. Should all the burners be turned on at once or individually, or does it make a difference?
It doesn't
when you're koshering the stovetop.
Okay, it doesn't make a difference. In a glass stovetop, there is an advantage to putting them on at more than one of them at once, and that's because it'll help the area between the burners get hotter. You know, let's say the burner in the back right and the front right are on the same time, then the glass in between them will get hotter, which is advantageous towards the koshering of it. But let's say in a Electrics, regular electric stovetop or a gas one, doesn't make a difference if they're on at the same time. Okay, let's move on to our oven. We're going to finish with the oven, and then I'll be happy to take more questions after that. That is like this. All ovens, we're going to talk about the baby kosher. Okay, this actually has to do with the stovetop. Okay, back to a stovetop for a second. I'm sorry. It's in my notes wrong. In a stovetop, has an area behind it, like sort of like a backsplash. If you have a stovetop that's part of an oven, then behind the burners, there's something, I don't know what you call it, that needs to be covered with some kind of a foil or something, because during Pesach, pots will invariably be banged into that, just like chametz pots banged into that. You can't really kasher that area, so you cover it with foil, being careful to leave open, this tends to be a vent over there, to not cover the vent, because or else the hot air won't be able to escape from your oven. Okay,
so that's the oven. Okay, two more questions about the stovetop. One is, do they have to be in a benyomo? Does it matter if you're putting them into a self-clean? Well, we're going to get to self-cleaning ovens. And then what do we say about the knobs? Should they be covered, the knobs of the stove?
So what it is that technically, by the letter of the law, the knobs and the surfaces around them do not need to be kosher or covered. That's the letter of the law. They don't need to be. They shouldn't be touching food. And they don't need to be covered. They tend to not even be hot. They don't need to be covered. However, the minig is that anything that comes that's going to be in contact with food or that you're going to deal with when you work with food should be covered. Even if you're cashing or even if it won't be hot. Like, for example, I should talk about this, the shelves in your refrigerator or the shelves in your pantry, those surfaces, there's nothing hot there. There isn't any blea there of chametz as a rule. But the minig is, since food comes in direct contact with those places, where you use them while you're cooking or eating, those surfaces should be covered. So the same applies to the knobs on your stovetop. Technically, there's no bleo there. Technically, there's nothing there. It's just you touch it with your hand and maybe a drop of food, you can just wipe off. But since you're going to be touching those areas while you're cooking, in the middle of working with food, you're going to be touching those areas. The minig is that, as to the extent possible, they should be covered. Knobs are not so easy to cover, but the areas around it, and as I mentioned, the shelves in your pantry and your refrigerator, should be covered. Again, it's not technically required, but the minig is to cover them because they come in contact with you. They're right around the food all over the place. We're extra careful for Pesach.
Mention that if you're going to cover the shelves in your refrigerator, just make sure you make sure the air can circulate so you don't break your...
Poke some holes. Yes, good idea. Okay, my speaker's not working. Okay, do you still hear me? I got this funny notice here. Okay, I'm going to keep on going. Okay, for an oven, the simplest ovens to kosher are self-cleaning ovens. And that's because they get so hot that they qualify for a kind of kosher we call Lieben Gomer. And because they get so hot, we have many advantages, and the advantages are we don't have to clean them, which is to say is we have to take off any big pieces or any like noticeable chunks of food, or if you have baking powder on the bottom of your oven because it was a spill, or those have to be taken off. But any little pieces and residue and this and that does not have to be taken off, because it will be incinerated by when you do the Lieben, when you self-clean it. And it also does not have to be in a binyamin. You can kosher it even if it's been used in the past 24 hours. So those are two big advantages to having a self-cleaning oven. And what you have to do is take off any big pieces, turn it on to self-clean, to run for a full self-clean cycle. And when you come back, your oven will be kosher Pesach.
That includes does that work for the door? The doors are usually glass.
Yes, it works for the glass and it works for the door. We as a rule, we don't kosher glass. This method of kosher works for glass also. It works for the glass. It koshers the grates that are inside your oven also. Someone had mentioned quickly about, you had said beforehand about, should you put your stovetop grates into there? I would not recommend you put your stovetop grates in for self-cleaning. That's because it may leave a smell on those grates. They're not really meant to be heated to that temperature, and they may discolor them or make them a smell. And just putting them on 550 for an hour is enough to kosher them. But the grates that are inside your oven, the racks inside of your oven, they could be koshered with self-cleaning. So literally you put on self-cleaning, lock the door, put on self-cleaning, and come back 3-4 hours later, and it'll be ready to go for Pesach. So that's really great for people who have that, okay? There's something called, there's a newer thing the past couple of years called the low-temperature self-clean. Goes by brands Aqualift and Steam Clean. Okay, those are not what we're talking about. That kind of self-cleaning is not Lieben Gomer. It's not a koshering at all. So that's not something you could use. But the traditional self-cleaning oven, which gets to 800 degrees, 900 degrees, 1,000 degrees, that's leave-in gummer, and that's it works. It cleans off all the residue, and it also works even if it's ain't a binyan. Okay? If you don't have self-cleaning or it doesn't work on your oven, then you can kasher it, but it's more difficult, and that's because you first need to clean it really thoroughly. Most people find it very hard to clean an oven. There's usually lots of mess and dirt baked on there for the whole year's worth, and needs a serious amount of cleaning. If you have someone who could do that, or you could do it yourself, that's great. It's a nice job. It's a difficult job to do. It needs to be cleaned, and then it needs to be not used for 24 hours. And after you got it clean and not used for 24 hours, then you turn on to 550 and you leave it running for an hour, and that will catch your oven. That will include your door and your glass window in there also. All those things are included as well. But it's more difficult because it needs a lot of cleaning. It needs a lot of elbow grease just to scrub it clean. And, of course, it needs to be ain't a binyan. Okay.
So a lot of people are asking about the different parts of the door.
Go ahead.
So the door is made that, like, the glass gets put into the door, but there are parts that are around the edge, like it has, like, that seal, that seal, like gasket or whatever it is. Do those get kosher, but we're not concerned? How does that work?
They're covered by this koshering. It's okay. The fact that I know there's a gasket and it's kosher as well.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Are you finishing?
I'm finished with what I prepared to say. So if there's any other questions, I'm happy to answer some more questions.
Here's an interesting one. A double wall oven, can I kosher one without the other? Is there a specific one? I don't even know what that is.
Okay. They mean is some people have ovens that have a double compartment oven. They have two small ovens rather than one large one or two large ones even. So it really depends on how the oven is constructed. Like, for example, the more common question than for Pesach is that people want to know, can I make one for dairy and one for meat? And it really depends on how the oven is built, how the venting and how the walls are constructed. And it's something you need to find out about. Now, if your oven has a Shabbos mode, most of the Shabbos mode ovens are certified by the Star K, and you can call them and ask them and say, tell me, I have this double wall oven that you give hashgacha to. Do you know if I can kosher one without the other? And do you know if I can use one for meat and one for dairy? It's something that they think about because they know people want to ask that. And it really depends on what's going on in the kishkas of the oven, how it was built. We once went to certify a facility that had like that. And when you cooked in one oven, steam was pouring into the other oven. They were like really connected, and it was not good to have one meat, one dairy. But in home ovens, it's often not like that, and you need to know about your oven. If easier is to speak to the Star King.
Okay, just a clarification more about the door. I'll read what it says. Not the gasket. The inside of the door touches the rim that's outside the actual oven. So I guess there's a rim around the door, I guess above the gasket. I'm saying all that stuff, as long as it's clean, we don't have to worry about all that.
It's fine. Right? It's all kosher. And it's the part. Everything is koshered or doesn't pose a problem for Pesach. It's fine. Well, either the regular koshering at 550 or the self-cleaning take care of all those parts.
Okay, so if you want to can you just go over again koshering the grates for the stovetop inside your oven, how you do that just one more time?
Yes. Yes. If you want us to kosher them in your oven has to have not been used in 24 hours.
How clean does it have to be?
The oven does not have to, for this, you don't, the oven does not have to be clean. You put down a piece of foil on top of the rack that you're going to be putting it onto. Don't put the grates right onto the rack. Put a piece of foil down. Put the racks and all the pieces on top of it. Close the door, put on the oven for 550 for an hour, and your stovetop grates were koshered. And all the pieces I told you about, all the little discs and the pieces that fit under there, all those get koshered as well. Does not have to be clean, but just needs a piece of foil underneath them, and 550 for now.
Okay, and then someone asked about an induction stovetop. Is that too complicated for now?
An induction stovetop. Okay, we don't have a good method for koshering an induction stovetop. But what we recommend for that is that you actually find the discs. They make discs that are the full size of a pot to go on an induction stovetop. They're made specifically for induction, which is to say is that they're ferromagnetic, and they cause the induction stovetop to go on. And instead of catching it, don't use it for 24 hours before Pesach. Put one of those discs on and then cook on top of it. Now, it causes problems. It's hard to have one of those for Shabbos and Yom Tov because it's really difficult to cook with them on Shabbos and Yom Tov. But as far as Pesach-wise, just put a disc on special for Pesach.
Okay, and then somebody asked about putting a barbecue grate inside a self-cleaning oven. That should work, right?
If your barbecue grate fits into a self-cleaning oven, if it'll fit inside, yes, that would do the trick also. That's fine.
Okay. Okay, so I think that a lot of the questions here are questions that could be asked through email, and it's already a little bit later. So again, so if anyone has any further questions, you can please feel free to email us at info@crcweather.org. Although we all might be working at home, we're still answering the phones, and messages are being relayed to the different rabbis. So if you want to call and leave a message, you could do that also. And then we also have our Facebook page, our Twitter feed. We have people answering questions there as well. So we're really here to answer your questions. Again, our email address is info@crcweb.org. And we'd like to thank everyone for participating. And we'd like to thank Rabbi Cohn for taking his time to help us do this. A lot of us are doing this for the first time this year. And we hope that next year might be a little less stressful and we can join our families again. But for now, this is very helpful for everyone. Again, if you have any other questions, you can feel free to email us or contact us another way. Okay, thank you so much.
Good night, everybody.